You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
The following is a presentation of the Belly Up Sports Media Network.
Here's what's cooking on today's Sports Stove podcast. We have March Madness in full bloom. Major League Baseball opening day is tomorrow. And the Sports Stove NFL Mock Draft 1.0 dropped last night. We're going to talk all about it. We're also covering NASCAR in Richmond. And that's what's cooking on today's Sports Stove podcast.
From Belly Up Sports and the Belly Up Podcast Network, you're listening to the Sports Stove Podcast with your host, Vince Stover.
Hey, good looking. What you got cooking? How's about cooking something up in me?
Welcome in to an all-new edition of the Sports Stove Podcast, presented by Righteous Felon Jerky. Now is the time to join the flavor revolution, and you can do it at righteousfelon.com. Use the promo code STOVE15, STOVE15 at checkout. You're going to get 15% off your purchase. Welcome into our Wednesday night program. We have so much to talk about. I'm your host, Vince Stover, joined as I am every Wednesday night by my dad, Dale Stover. Dad, how you doing?
Doing good, doing good. Like you said, busy time in sports, a lot of fun with March Madness, except baseball starting, just all the sports or stuff, going on here. And hopefully we're getting to springtime here pretty quick. So we will see. But yeah, a lot going on, a lot to talk about tonight. Like I said, the NFL, always news happening every week in that, the same way with their annual meetings this week. So.
Yeah. So I we just got home from church and getting the show started. I was pulling up my social media. I always try to do this before we start the show, make sure I'm not missing anything. And former guest of the podcast, actually from this year, Maddie Rutan. She's a softball pitcher for Eastern Kentucky University. Her very first game as a freshman was a no-hitter. And then tonight, Dad, first of all, she's 13-2 on the year as a pitcher. Tonight, she went 5.1 innings with 7 strikeouts, and she went 2-for-3 from the plate, 2 home runs, 6 RBIs, 2 runs, including a grand slam tonight. This girl is just dominating, and she's a freshman. She's doing it all as a true freshman, and had her on the show several weeks ago now. But Maddie Rutan's a name. If you care at all about softball, you need to know this name. She had 13 strikeouts last week in the game. She's killing it this year. So shout out to Maddie Rutan, EKU softball. Another great performance tonight. That's just phenomenal. Okay, let's get to the things at hand, though, Dad. We are in the middle of March Madness. Everyone's got their brackets. Everyone has their brackets busted to some degree. But we come down to the Elite Eight. It's an intriguing group, isn't it? No, we're in the Sweet 16. Sorry, Sweet 16. And it's a really intriguing group. I have all but 3 of my Sweet 16 teams still in, which is exciting, of course, for everyone. No, just exciting for me. But still, exciting for me nonetheless. Any big surprises, Dad? I mean, we can talk about Kentucky. I've made my thoughts pretty well known on this over the years. I think Coach Cal is a phenomenal recruiter and not a very good basketball coach. and losing again in the first round of the tournament is just embarrassing. And I just, he gets paid too much to lose in the first round of the tournament every year, every other year. So it's disappointing. That was a surprise, though, for sure. I don't know, Dad, any other surprising games that kind of stood out to you?
Well, like the fact I think that the ACC is doing so well, and they have really kind of two surprise teams with Clemson and NC State advancing on in. So, you know, that's been a surprise. This year, when you look at the look at the teams in the Sweet 16, though, there's really not any great surprises. There were some underdogs that won the first game, but didn't advance really to the Sweet 16. I mean, NC State is a lower-ranked team, but that's not a small school surprise from there. So it could be a very interesting Sweet 16 because, like I said, you've got, there's obviously your favorites, but it could be some pretty good games, and probably almost any of those 16 teams could go into this saying, hey, with a little bit, we get hot here, we can at least make a run to the Final Four.
Yeah, two teams I've been impressed with are two teams that I did not pick to get to the Sweet 16, Clemson and Gonzaga. Clemson is, and we talked about this last week before the tournament started. You just don't look at Clemson as a basketball school. And unless you watch Clemson basketball, you have no clue what Clemson basketball is doing this year, generally speaking. And they came in with a big win. Well, they got things started off against New Mexico. Then they beat Baylor. And that's a good win for Clemson. Gonzaga, on the other hand, they're a team that we've know about just because of their past. Got a good coach, usually a veteran team. They come out and put it on Kansas, get the win over Kansas, which we celebrate, even though I didn't pick that game. I'm always happy when Bill Self exits stage left in the tournament. So I'm excited about that one, too. And Gonzaga and Kansas was a relatively fun game to watch as well. But I think those two teams kind of stand out. Iowa State, Illinois should be a really good game. I expect North Carolina, Alabama to be a really good game as well. Houston and Duke should be a fun game to watch. So I think there's some really good games out there. Creighton and Tennessee should be a really fun game to watch too.
Yeah.
So there's some fun ones out there right now. And I still have six of my Elite Eight teams still in the tournament, minus Kentucky and Kansas. I still have six Elite Eight teams there. And all my Final Four are still in the tournament, which I think this is the first year in a long time that I've had my Final Four still around after the first weekend of games. So that's exciting too. Any thoughts though on what's ahead here, Sweet 16, Elite Eight that we see this weekend?
Like I said, I think it'll be good games and see. Like I said, my bracket, I'm just a little behind you. I was 12-4 as far as the Sweet 16 are concerned. And I believe I have, let's see, I was just counting them up here. I think maybe about six or seven of my Elite Eight teams left. So, could still do well there. I had one Final Four team, Baylor, that went down, and that was kind of going to hurt my bracket at some point there. But we'll see. I think it could be really good games here Thursday and Friday. It could set up good for the weekend. And it'll be interesting to see. You know, you could have four of the favorites in the Final Four. Could be some people you didn't think was going to be there. So, and again, it's always interesting to see the conferences, how that ends up in the Final Four also. But, you know, not as strong with the SEC, I think, has two schools. Big Ten has just two schools left. So we'll see from there.
Yeah, I don't know. For me, the tournament, I don't pay as much attention to the conferences in the tournament as I do like in football and the playoffs and things like that. But I mean, it does matter to a degree, of course, as well. And you see the strength of this year's definitely, I mean, the SEC has not been a basketball conference, but Alabama and Tennessee still in, of course, there. So anyways, those games tip off again. March 28th is the next set of games there in the Elite Eight. And then the Sweet 16 will follow the Sweet 16, March 28th and 29th. Elite Eight is the rest of the weekend, the 30th and the 31st, leading us into the Final Four on April 6th and the championship on April 8th. All right, Dad, speaking of champions, you cannot be a champion in the NFL unless you draft well. And this week, actually last night, we dropped the Sports Stove NFL Mock Draft 1.0 on bellyupsports.com. You can find that on our social media pages as well as on bellyupsports.com. And I wanted to cover, kind of get some thoughts on this as we are approaching the draft ever so quickly. And so I always do my mock drafts as the way that I think it's going. I'm trying to predict the way it's going to go. So I'm not doing what I think they should do. I'm doing what I think they will do. So let's just start kind of at the top and work through this a little bit. Started off, it's really easy. Pick number one, Chicago Bears, Caleb Williams. Everyone's got that pinned in. There's not a whole lot more to talk about. Everybody's talked like crazy about that. So then it comes into number two, the Washington Commanders. And quarterback seems to be the obvious pick. The question, though, really is which quarterback do the Commanders like the most? You've got the reigning Heisman Trophy winner that has been marked there a lot in Jalen Daniels. Then you've got, let's see here, then you've got Drake May from North Carolina. And then rising through here in the last couple of weeks has been J.J. McCarthy of Michigan. And I slotted in McCarthy at number two. There's just been so much smoke around J.J. McCarthy's name. I like Jaden Daniels better. I think he should be the pick, and he very well may be the pick. There's just been so much smoke around J.J. McCarthy this week that I put him at number two to the Commanders. And then at number three, we had a trade, the Vikings trading in to the number three spot from the New England Patriots and taking Drake May. Let me talk about Drake May for a second, Dad. First of all, Drake May fits the Viking system. It's a Shanahan-type system, and so they just need a guy. And May is more – he can move in the pocket. He's an athlete as well. But he just fits that more of what they like in that system. And I didn't know this when I made the selection last night. Found out today that the Vikings offensive coordinator was Drake May's high school coach, Josh McCown. And I found that out after I posted the article, and I thought, well, my goodness, if anybody would want him, you would think it would be him. So we'll see how that goes. But Dad, we know it's going to go quarterback 1, 2, 3. The question obviously is which quarterbacks and which order and things like that. But just your thoughts overall, Washington and Minnesota trading into that spot, those quarterbacks at 2 and 3.
Well, I think, you know, again, I've seen some, you know, like I said, Minnesota, or I've seen different mock drafts. I saw one where it had Denver trading up, you know, to the three spot there. Some people, you know, with New England staying in that. And so we'll see. Like you said, I think the first two will be pretty well set, taking quarterbacks, and a quarterback will probably go third and may even go fourth, you know, depending if somebody trades up there, you know, with Arizona or how they do that. The question really will be which quarterback, and I'm sure in the next 3 weeks we'll hear a lot, and usually it switches around, you know, different people liking, you know, different ones. We talked a little bit the other day about, to me, the pressure really is on Washington. They need a quarterback, and they're going to be able to get one. It's just they need to make the right choice. And we learned last year the number two quarterback can be the right one. It was last year. And maybe the first four or five, there may be five or six quarterbacks in this draft that may all end up being good NFL quarterbacks. You just don't know. You know, they're not going to go in the top five or six picks, all of them, but you know, the top three or four picks will be, you know, quarterbacks will go pretty quick. So it, a lot will hinge because there's going to be some teams, you know, needing quarterbacks for the future. And there's going to be, you know, some good quarterbacks definitely in the second round and maybe even go past that depending on how the draft falls.
Yeah, I mean, historically, you're not going to have six good quarterbacks in one draft. It's just not the way it typically lays out. So you're looking at two guys that are you know, statistically going to make it. And the other ones are probably going to bust and be perennial backups at some point in their career. Dad, at number three, New England is there. I've got Minnesota trading into it. Denver, you know, would consider it possibly. Even the Giants have had some rumors there too. New England needs a quarterback too. Obviously, it depends on how much they like a guy. If they're not sold on these top quarterbacks, there's no reason for them to stay at three. They can trade down. If they get Minnesota's 11 and 23 picks, they can grab a quarterback at one of those spots. Do you think New England, I guess, what's the likelihood of New England trading out of number three? Now they have new leadership. It's no longer Bill Belichick. It's Elliott Wolf. They got new coach. Everything's kind of being run just not the way we have used, not the way we're used to in New England. Needless to say, do you think there's a likelihood they trade out of three?
I think the biggest likelihood for them to trade is because it would be with Minnesota, because Minnesota, it depends what they offer. If you can get two for, if New England, and again, knowing who the GM is now at New England, you know, if they can get two first round picks, and one of them, you know, not too far away, they're at 11, they may feel like, because again, New England's got a lot of needs. And they may get enough ammunition, depending on what Minnesota offered. Minnesota probably would have to offer more than just those two picks. They're maybe swapping some other picks or whatever. So I think the fact that the reason I would think New England might trade is because of what they could get. And I think they might feel like, hey, we need to rebuild here. We need to reload. The more picks we get, two picks in the first round, you know, maybe pick up a third or a fourth or a fourth, fifth, whatever. That's going to be more beneficial to us in the long term. I think everyone feels like Minnesota traded, you know, to get the picks with the idea of moving up. That's, I mean, you would think that's what they're thinking, even though you never quite know what Minnesota is going to do. So that's why I would think New England, you know, it makes sense that they may trade there.
Yeah, again, it comes down to how much they like the quarterbacks. If they like the guys like the Bo Nix or the Michael Penix or another guy later in the draft more than they like option number two or option number three, maybe they like a second quarterback like they like Caleb Williams and he gets taken number two, and they decide then we don't really like the option we have sitting here at three. Let's move back and get another guy that we like better. You know, it just depends on how they rank out these quarterbacks. And they got a ton of people I saw at these pro days for these quarterbacks they're checking out right now. So, you know, they're going to do their due diligence, and wherever they sit on these quarterbacks is where they'll end up going. I had 4, 5, and 6, Arizona, Los Angeles, and the Giants. I'll go wide receivers. I think offensive linemen could happen at number 5 or even possibly number 6. But the Chargers and the Giants really need playmakers. And the Cardinals, we got them taking Marvin Harrison Jr. from Ohio State. The Chargers taking Malik Nabers from LSU. And the Giants taking Rome Odunze from Washington. I'd be a little surprised if this is how it shakes out, honestly, going 4, 5, 6, three receivers right in a row there. But these are all number one receivers in the NFL and all have a ton of potential, and all these teams need playmakers. Any thoughts on the wide receiver run at this spot?
You know, that makes sense. It may not go that way just because there are some really good offensive linemen and some really good defensive players. But I think those teams you've got there can all, like you said, can all use playmakers. All needs people, and these do seem to be the top three, you know, consensus top three wide receivers. So very easily be a little surprising in drafts to see that, you know, that high three wide receivers in a row. But it, you know, it easily could happen.
And Mel Kiper has talked, he says, talked to several teams who have Nabers ranked over Marvin Harrison Jr. So it may not even go in this order. But I do think these are the top three receivers we'll see go in the draft. And I'd be shocked if Arizona passes on receiver. And the Chargers, listen, they lost everything. Keenan Allen's gone. Mike Williams is gone. They need a running back. They're not going to draft him here at five. They need playmakers. And so they need a receiver at five, I think. And then the Giants, same way. You're going with Daniel Jones. I mean, my goodness, give him somebody to throw to. Look at Chicago. They gave Justin Fields no weapons or very few weapons, and he didn't make it. Now you're looking here at Daniel Jones, and whether or not you believe in Daniel Jones, that's a whole nother conversation. But you as a team need to put your quarterback in a position to succeed. He needs people to throw the football to. And so one of these three receivers would help. I got the Titans going with offensive lineman Joe Alt from Notre Dame at seven. First O-lineman off the board. There are several O-linemen that are going to go here in the first round. And I'm sure there are some that have some variation. You know, I know some people like J.C. Latham from Alabama better. Olamui, I don't even know how to say his first name, Fashanu from Penn State. People like him too. But Joe Alt just seems to be a Titan. I mean, he's just the kind of guy that fits in, fits into the Titans. And they need offensive line help a lot. Atlanta, I've got Atlanta taking Jared Verse from Florida State. And most people, not most people, every single person I've seen has Dallas Turner going before Jared Verse. But Jared Verse is an athlete that just jumps out at you. And I feel like he's going to continue to just kind of show out leading up to the draft. I think he's the first edge rusher gone. And I think he fits in Atlanta. Raheem Morris is a defensive-minded coach. They've got so many offensive weapons over the last several years. It makes sense for them to go defense here in the first round. I got the Bears taking an O-line at nine, Fashanu from Penn State at nine. And then I've got the Broncos trading up to number 10 to get Jalen Daniels. If he's still on the board at 10, you got to assume one of these teams that are quarterback needy, they might even jump before then. But I put them at 10 to take Jalen Daniels at 10. So, Dad, rounding out the top 10, Joe Alt, Jared Verse, Fashanu, and Jalen Daniels. Thoughts on those picks?
Yeah, I think those are all pretty safe picks. Like I said, I think Denver, you know, definitely be in the market for a quarterback, whether they move up earlier or if they can get, you know, who they want there at 10, that would be good. Chicago would make sense to take one of the offensive linemen. Like you said, everything I looked at had Tennessee taking Alt from Notre Dame there, and you see his name pretty regular. You're right, different ones, different drafts I saw had Turner ahead of Verse, but had Atlanta taking a, you know, defensive edge rusher there. So, you never, if you get a can't-miss edge rusher, that would really fit in well with Atlanta, with where they're at right now. So I think that that all makes pretty good sense.
We're not going to run through every pick, but the Patriots then, who I had trading down from number three to get the 11 and the 23 picks from Minnesota. I've got them taking Brock Bowers at 11, the Georgia tight end. He's one of those dynamic playmakers, but he got hurt last year, didn't produce as much. I think had he been healthy all of last year, he's probably a top five pick or a top six pick, but I think he falls out of the first top 10 picks here in round one. And then at 23, I had them getting their quarterback, the Patriots getting Bo Nix out of Oregon. I originally put in Michael Penix in this spot, and I went a few picks further down, and I just came back. I feel like there's more positive vibes right now for Bo Nix than there is for Michael Penix. So I went with Bo Nix instead of Michael Penix. I did not have Michael Penix in the first round, but Patriots get their quarterback at 23 and give him a weapon at 11 as well with the big tight end from Georgia. I'm intrigued to see what New England does this year, Dad. Like I said, we have no clue because we've not seen Elliott Wolf draft before, and we've not seen Jared Mayo be in the head seat this before. So I'm interested to see what they do, how they do it, and how the fans react to it. Caleb McChesney, who's been on the show before to talk NASCAR, he was not pleased with my Bo Nix pick, and he said he would blame me personally if the Patriots picked Bo Nix. We'll see how that one shakes out. Dad, you've read through the mock draft. What other picks, if any, stood out to you either as surprising or you think is just way wrong?
Well, one question I've got, and maybe I'm missing something, is Vegas. Don't they need a quarterback?
So popular opinion would say yes. The issue, though, with Vegas is they've kind of set up their team, I think, in a way to not take a big swing at quarterback this year. Bringing in Gardner Minshew, the coach is already talking up Aiden O'Connell. He's earned his right to fight for the job. I think Vegas will select a quarterback. I just don't think it'll be in round one, unless somebody's dropping that they're super high on, of course. But I see them being a more second or third round quarterback selection, and really not even expecting that guy to be the future of the program.
Yeah, the other one I saw, again, looking at a lot of other mock drafts and comparing to this one, and maybe this is an injury thing because I've read about this, but the edge rusher from UCLA, a lot of them, or Latta, however you pronounce that, a lot of them have him going a lot earlier. Is that an injury thing, or just don't think he's as good as the other edge rushers?
To me, he's just – it's where he ranks as an edge rusher. Latu from UCLA. I've got him going to Arizona at 27. I've seen some people put him at Tampa at 26 is the most popular place that I've seen him going. I just think where you rank the edge rushers at, he's third. And then just with needs from teams, he just – to me, he doesn't fit in those spots with these other teams that – really, when you look at the needs that go into it, could someone take him before then? Sure. But, I mean, Jacksonville, they've got strong edge rushers. Cincinnati's got good edge rushers. Pittsburgh, Miami, Philadelphia, New England, even Green Bay. I mean, there's just – it's part of it's just where can he fit in? The other part is I don't know enough about his health to play too big of a factor right now into where I put him.
Yeah, because I've just read where some people say he can be a real difference maker, you know, could really be a guy for a team. So I was kind of interested in that. The other picks, you know, again, seem to be pretty consistent with everything. Different ones move around. As I read different mock drafts, it does look like there's quite a few wide receivers. Yeah. After those first three, then there are some differences. You've got two or three there. I saw another mock draft that had a two or three different guys. So there seems to be a lot of wide receivers out there, which, again, you know, that I would think you'd have people that need wide receiver then that are comfortable waiting till the second round, maybe top of the third from there. One guy you mentioned who does seem real high, you know, is the tight end from Georgia, Bowers. I saw another draft that had the Jets staying at their pick and taking him there at there. So again, you know, not a lot of tight ends like last year, but he definitely seems to be, you know, the main one there. Then it looks like a lot of defensive backs, a few good defensive linemen. You know, not necessarily a lot, but a few, but a lot of offensive linemen. And of course, there's always going to be surprises. Somebody's going to, you know, rate somebody higher, and there'll be somebody going the first round that, you know, none of the mock drafts. Another name I've heard when I listen during the day some to a Milwaukee radio station to hear Packer news. And one guy that, of course, Mark Towser is on there, and a guy he is always high on and says the Packers should pick is Chop Robinson. And I've seen him at different spots in the draft. I heard Mel Kiper talking the other day. You know, he thinks he'll be very productive and could go anywhere there in the bottom half of the first round. What have you found, or what do you think about Chop Robinson?
I've got him at 29 to Detroit. That being said, Detroit's probably going to draft someone we've never heard of with their first round pick. But I've got him there. I like him. I think that him and Latu kind of fit in that same general category. They both seem to have a ton of upside and a ton of talent, maybe a little raw with it, where when they get to the NFL, there's going to have to be some fine tuning, which would be true with a lot of people, of course, as well. I'm interested to see, as I continue to do more research and get into mock 2.0, this bottom part of the draft is probably going to change drastically, I would say, because there's a lot of differing philosophies on this. But I think the edge rushers, everyone can use edge rushers. So it's finding one that fits, you know, your system And then kind of, you know, the Packers last year picked a guy who really all he could do was rush the passer. And for them, I mean, that's what he did in college at the very least. And so there's this, if you can fit him into a role, if you have the luxury to use your first round pick as a role player, I think your edge rushers can be really helpful, especially at the end of the first round there as well. But I want to go back to something you said about the Jets, Dad. A lot of people are putting Brock Bowers at the Jets. Why do they do that? Well, Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback, and he needs weapons, and he wants, you know, good players and all this kind of stuff. Okay, we're Packer fans. We spent 16 years with Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers does want talent. He doesn't love rookies. It's not really where his motto fits. They bring in Mike Williams. They've already got an incredible a receiver that they just drafted not long ago. I do not see them taking a pass catcher in the first round. Offensive line, I could see they've made some trades. They got guys that are older, signing free agency, that have some injury issues. So could they go offensive line there? They definitely could. I've got them taking cornerback Terrion Arnold from Alabama to strengthen the defense up a little bit. I don't see the Jets taking Brock Bowers because everyone's reasoning is Aaron Rodgers would love Brock Bowers. I don't know that he would. Aaron Rodgers just wants people to be where they're supposed to be. And historically, it's not been rookies that Aaron Rodgers has found great connection with. And again, you know, everybody told us for years the Packers needed to draft a receiver in round one. Well, they rated around two, and they continue to succeed mighty well with wide receivers. So if your reasoning for picking Brock Bowers for the Jets is because of Aaron Rodgers, then I do not listen to your opinion. If your reason is because Brock Bowers is the best player available, I'm all for that. But if it's Aaron Rodgers, well, then you're wrong. Aaron Rodgers does not care about a rookie tight end, in my opinion, at least.
Looking at the other picks, it was interesting getting familiar with the names. And, you know, again, a lot of them were from high pedigree schools, so that makes sense there. Again, you know, if you're a GM and you're really making picks for the right reason, then you may say, wow, I need a guy with a good name. And I couldn't believe Kool-Aid McKinstry. That would have to be the guy you would choose.
Now, coming into the beginning of the college season, Kool-Aid McKinstry was thought to be one of the top cornerbacks. His teammate surpassed him throughout the year. McKinstry did not have a great season, and so he's expected to be third, fourth, fifth corner off the board this year. I got Cooper DeJean going 19 to the Rams. The Rams don't seem to care too much about your 40 time and things like that. DeJean has a lot of versatility, can play a lot of different places. Cornerback, safety, the nickel, whatever it may be. And he just seems like a good fit there at the Rams. I got McKinstry going to Philadelphia at 22. I got the Packers taking Kamari Lassiter from Georgia at 25. The Bills taking Nate Wiggins from Clemson at 28. So there's going to be a fair amount of DBs, offensive linemen, wide receivers. I only have one more wide receiver going in the first round, and that's Brian Thomas Jr. from LSU. I have him go to Dallas as they're a little depleted in the wide receiver room right now. So I picked him up there as well. So you can catch the entirety of the Sports Stove NFL Mock Draft 1.0 on bellyupsports.com. You can also find it on the Sports Stove social media pages, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Well, actually, it's not listed on Instagram, so I guess you can't find it there. But you can find that information there and read the rest of the NFL mock draft. Feel free to comment your thoughts on it and let us know what you think and where you agree or where you do not agree as well. All right, Dad, this is Wednesday night. Tomorrow is Thursday, and it is Major League Baseball opening day. Now, yes, there have been two games already played over in Seoul, Korea. Well, we don't count those. We care about the real games. And I am already bummed because the Brewers have postponed their first game in New York with the Mets because of weather. And so they will not play their first game tomorrow. Hopefully they'll play it Friday Most of Major League Baseball, with the exception of four teams, are playing tomorrow now for opening day. And, Dad, we love opening day. We love baseball. We love what's ahead. We got some fun things to talk about throughout the year with Shohei Ohtani, Yamamoto. We talked about those guys on Sunday night on the Fantasy Baseball Show. There's a lot of new prospects up, Jackson Churio, Wyatt Langford, those kinds of things as well. So there's a lot of fun things going on this year. You're near Cincinnati, and that used to be a historical opening day city. Not quite as much as it used to be, but I know Cincinnati still takes it serious. So I'm sure things are popping up there in Ohio.
Yeah, no, Cincinnati's excited. I think Cleveland fans are excited too, you know, going into the year. It's a big baseball state in a lot of ways. I mean, football, you know, and college football and pro football, there's a lot, but a lot of history, especially in Cincinnati, used to always be opening day, had parades not only in Cincinnati, but in a lot of surrounding towns and cities around. It was just a huge thing there. And I think everybody's excited. You know, again, you know, starting this early in the year, you get weather in certain places where, you know, probably not traditional baseball weather, but it will be pretty quick. So it's exciting to see opening day. Like I said, we've been talking a lot about, you know, we drafted our fantasy team, so we're anxious to see how that's going to go. And, you know, we'll go from there. My Giants open up with San Diego. We'll see how that starts out. And everybody's got a clean slate on opening day. So we'll go from there.
The NL West has added some pretty good pitching here in the offseason. The Giants add Blake Snell. The Padres add Dylan Cease. And the Diamondbacks just added Jordan Montgomery as well. So you add that to an already stacked division. Yamamoto, of course, with the Dodgers. Heather Glasnow now with the Dodgers too. That division has loaded up on pitchers coming in. You're a Giants fan. What's your concern level for the other teams? Obviously, you're not concerned about the Rockies. But for the other teams, the Padres, the Dodgers, and the Diamondbacks, what's your concern level there in the NL West?
Well, I mean, the Dodgers obviously have, you know, a lot of talent there and have spent a lot of money and continues to spend a lot of money to help their team. Diamondbacks, of course, you know, made it to the series last year. Your Giants have a new manager, so I think we'll be all right. San Diego, of course, underachieved last year. I don't know, you know, that they're going to be maybe a little bit better, but I think the Giants will be in the hunt. I think the division might be real competitive outside of Colorado. You know, we'll just see where that goes. Again, you know, the Dodgers are probably going to hit a streak somewhere, whether it's early or, you know, sometime during the season where they're going to make a big run there. But, of course, Giants, you know, like I said, picked up some pitching. They've got another guy, a real good pitcher they picked up that won't be available till, you know, about middle of the season or whatever. But that could make a big difference there. But like you said, a lot of pitching in that division. But, you know, we did our previews, and I think some teams are going to be improved this year, and that can make for good, you know, good division competition, no doubt about it.
The Dodgers also just re-signed their catcher to a 10-year deal, Will Smith, $140 million. Congrats to him there. Dad, let's do World Series picks so we can have it on the record. Your NL and AL representatives in the World Series this year are?
I'll go with that they will perform as they should, and I'll go with the Atlanta Braves in the National League. And, again, I'm high on the Baltimore Orioles in the American League. Houston may be the better pick. I don't know, but just to make a pick here in the dark, and before the season starts, let's go Atlanta and Baltimore.
All right. Well, I can't pick those two teams then. That's probably the direction I was leaning. The Diamondbacks made the right improvements to their pitching staff, adding Montgomery, adding Rodriguez, although he is injured currently. I'm going to say the Diamondbacks make it back. I love all the talent that they have. I like the Orioles a lot too. They made some good additions to their pitching staff as well. Then they've got all this young talent too. So I'm going to go Diamondbacks and Orioles as my picks, and I'll go with the Diamondbacks getting the World Series ring, banner, pennants, all those things, all trophy, all that stuff as well. Who's your pick for the winner of the World Series?
We'll go with Atlanta again. You know, they're such a strong team. They didn't make it last year. And again, the Phillies are going to be tough this year too. So it's kind of wide open. But at this point, let's go with Atlanta.
All right. Well, actually, in 20 minutes on the Belly Up Sports YouTube page, we're having a baseball super show. I'll be joining Brent Radlinski and some other guys there. Tune into that after this show is done. Belly Up Sports YouTube page to hear more baseball as we get into opening day. All right, Dad, we're going to wrap up with you and head over to our NASCAR segment. Anything else you want to add before we say goodbye to you?
No, like I said, we got a lot to talk about. We could have talked about a whole lot more, even some more stuff in football. Some of the decisions made at the meetings this week, but we'll save that for another time, no doubt about it. And again, you know, I've been keeping up with your NASCAR show, and I've enjoyed that, and I've been very interesting. So looking forward to hearing that tomorrow also.
All right. Well, Dad, thanks as always. We're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors, Righteous Felon Jerky. When we come back, we're attacking NASCAR with the one and only Chris Prince. Say hello to America's most wanted craft beef jerky. Over 15 flavors with all kinds of character. The number one jerky gift box and all natural black Angus quality made right here in the U.S. of A. Taste the flavor revolution at RighteousFelon.com. Use the promo code STOVE15 at checkout. That's RighteousFelon.com. Promo code STOVE15 at checkout. It's time to talk NASCAR in our newest segment, the Sports Stove Final. Joining us now to talk all things NASCAR, the COTA recap, Richmond preview, and I'm sure much, much more. He is from Belly Up Sports. He heads up the racing department there at bellyupsports.com, the one and only Chris Prince. Hey, Chris, man, how you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I am doing just dandy. Now, I'm all in on baseball right now. I'm not going to lie. My mind is now with the Brewers getting pushed back to Friday start time. That makes it easier for me to focus in a little bit right now. Let's talk about COTA. Actually, I want to talk about Bristol because I did not have a guest on last week. I shared my thoughts. Dad stayed on with me for that part of the segment. But I thought Bristol was so much fun, and most people agree with that. How was your take of Bristol a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, I liked Bristol. I thought it was a good show. I thought the racing was different than what you have come to expect there, but it wasn't a bad different. I was down for it. I hope that they don't make too many terrible changes to the tire.
Yeah, I liked the strategy that was involved. I like to see strategy pushed in. I thought the broadcast did a phenomenal job of explaining what was happening, kind of just talking through what was going on, showing the one more set of tires coming in, all that kind of stuff. I thought the broadcast did a phenomenal job with it as well. I thought it was very, very fun. Then go to COTA, which was last week. That COTA just doesn't do it for me. For me, I can find some intrigue. And again, I thought the broadcast did really good. I watched the whole thing. I just got to the end. I'm thinking, I probably could have done something better with my time than watch this race. What were your thoughts on COTA?
Yeah, COTA didn't put on a show, which I halfway kind of expected that.
Yeah.
But the sport was trending up after two good races, you know, in Atlanta and then Bristol. So I was hopeful, but I wasn't very satisfied with COTA either.
It's the one, to me, it's the one road race, the road course that every time I feel like it's just not, there's not enough there for me. To keep me really drawn into it. I also feel like it's the road course that the road course drivers don't necessarily stand out as much. It feels like the other road courses, you've got those road course drivers that they just stand out. It's when the SVG showed up in Chicago and won. Like those kinds of things, COTA seems a little bit more open to the average NASCAR driver versus the road course driver.
Yeah, it just seems to fit the bigger teams a little better. It doesn't give the little guys or the road course ringers as much of a chance, it seems like. I mean, you still have like AJ Allmendinger, but I consider him a road course veteran at this point because that's basically where he's won most of his races. But yeah. I mean, you don't see as many of the SVG type moments with those drivers at COTA. I mean, I think Kobayashi got spun like four or five times, one by Ricky Stenhouse, and then a couple other times. So Josh
Berry sent him around.
Yeah,
and it looked like both, at least those two instances, the Stenhouse and the Berry instance, it looked very intentional. Meaning they looked like they were kind of annoyed by him. And I'm not sure the broadcast did a great job of showing that stuff as much. They did a good job on the front and those final laps trying to talk you into believing that there could be a pass. But they didn't do a great job of showing the back end of the race. And there was a lot of interesting things it seems like going on back there.
Yeah, a lot of spins you can see on if you followed on Twitter were missed or not even shown for that matter. So it was definitely not a good broadcast product in my opinion. I think it was kind of hard too because, like we said, the race wasn't exactly exciting. But those closing laps, I will give them, like you said, they gave you a little bit to hope for. It got me a little more hopeful that maybe we would see something.
Five winners so far on the season. We've got the two wins from William Byron, including at COTA. Hendrick, of course, we knew they were going to be strong coming in, but sometimes I feel like you got to question which driver is going to stand out at Hendrick. And to me, it seems like William Byron is that guy at this point, even though Larson's been really good this season. Byron just kind of seems like he's got all the momentum right now at Hendrick.
Yeah, I mean, but that was kind of typical to last year too. I mean, William kind of just pulled away, it seemed like, and stood out. He just didn't put it together as well in the playoffs. But right now I could agree with you. I think though, which Caleb will like this when he listens, I think you need to watch Alex Bowman. I really do. He's starting to warm up and he warmed up on that Bristol race, which I kind of was surprised because you think of like managing your tire wear and stuff like that, but that it fit right into Alex's, you know, driving skills. So, and then he came out last week and had a pretty good race again. So I think he's warming up right now and he could easily steal a win at somewhere like Richmond or maybe one of the other road courses.
Yeah. And we've seen Reddick and Gibbs be there towards the front now for a couple of races. Toyota has looked really solid. We're kind of waiting to see. Chevy's had their moments. Of course, they've got some wins. They haven't been dominant to this point in the season. It seems like Toyota and specifically JGR is really kind of the front runners right now. At least it's the way I'm seeing it. Is that how you're seeing it?
Yeah, I mean, just consistently. I mean, they may not have all the wins to show for it. I mean, they still got some wins, but yeah, the speed is just consistently better. I mean, Christopher Bell was able to hold off the field on older tires and then drove back to almost, you know, a few more laps, and he might have caught William Byron, in my opinion. But, I mean, he just showed the speed, and then even Denny was able to drive up and near the top 10. A lot of their cars just consistently week in and week out are having a lot more speed shown. And then that falls over with the 2311 teams as well.
Yeah, it's been – of course, I'm a Ford guy, and so it's been kind of disappointing. Ryan Blaney's been pretty solid so far this year. Outside of him, it's been kind of hit or miss. Buescher's looked decent. He's kind of started to seem like he's picking up a little bit right now. And Keselowski, man, there are moments it looks like he's back. And then he spins. And you're like, oh, never mind.
I'm not high on Brad right now. He's at risk of falling off my top 15, my power rankings. And I think it's kind of bad because I think that car could perform a little better. And I don't know if it's just the team itself or Brad losing it or what it could be at this point. But Chris Buescher's warming up, like you said, too. So it kind of makes him look a little worse when he's the veteran driver and he's not performing as well.
Do you think that with all the responsibility he has, he's the lead driver of a team, He's a owner of the team. He's a veteran for four drivers for all of NASCAR, of course, as well. Do you think that maybe he's being stretched in so many directions? It's an impacting how he's driving, or do you think it's more of just an age kind of thing?
It is. I think that's possible. Yeah. I mean, cause Brad's really involved and you can see that just in the performance since he's came on board, that team has gotten significantly better. Brad is more involved. Even the Rick Ware Racing Alliance team. I know Justin Haley got, you know, just DQ'd for whatever reason afterwards, but still their performance is even looking better from their affiliation with RFK. So I could see that. Yeah, I mean, his brain's a little stretched. I know he actually just had a little boy, too, a new baby. So, I mean, he's definitely got his resources stretched real thin, I imagine.
A lot happening for sure. Now, I'm not a Bubba guy. I've never been a Bubba guy. That being said, I don't think I'm being biased in this situation. I'm kind of surprised that Bubba's not doing better this year, especially with how the Toyotas have been running up towards the front and things. It just seems like Bubba Wallace has not been in the conversation at many of these races.
Yeah, I could definitely see why. A lot just, and I'm me doing the power rankings like we've talked about before, you take a lot of notes. He's had a lot of things just tiny or you would seem like insignificant things that affect days where he's running top 10. And then he winds up falling back and he just never recovers. He's a bottom of the top 15 type driver after that incident. The tiniest of things, whether it be a lug nut getting locked on the wheel or something like that out of his control, but definitely would appear like he's not performing well, but I don't think it's going to continue very much longer because I think we're going to some tracks that Bubba's skill set suits a little better. He's really good at like Martinsville and the Richmonds and stuff like that. I know he doesn't have the wins, obviously, but those are tracks that I feel like he's better at.
So I look at, looking ahead to the end of the year and championship and things like that. Byron obviously makes a whole lot of sense with the two wins and the Hendrick and all that kind of stuff. But, man, every week I see Christopher Bell and I just think, this kid is destined to be a champion, and he is destined to be the face of NASCAR here in the next couple of years, I think. His personality is fun. His racing is phenomenal. And I think if he kind of comes out of his shell a little bit, I think you're going to start seeing him maybe even overtake as the most popular driver at some point. I don't know. I'm not a Toyota guy, but the more I watch Christopher Bell, the more I'm like, man, I really like that kid.
Yeah, I think he's definitely someone that you got to watch each week, and he's become that progressively more in his time, like in his career. You know, he started off going back-to-back Final Four in the playoffs, championship appearance, and then I think he probably would have contended last season had his brakes not blown out in the, opening stage. But, yeah, I like Christopher Bell. His performance is there, and he's consistent with it. He seems like he's a little more open than normal. Because I followed Bell since his Xfinity days, and he was, more of just the racer, which I kind of like in a sense. But I like that you can see his personality more. Like I seen where he was calling Bob Pockrass out in his post race when he won a couple weeks ago. I love stuff like that. I want the drivers to have personality.
Yeah, I love it. All right, let's talk about Richmond. I have not had a time to do my research for Richmond yet, so I need your help. Tell me all about it. Tell me what we're looking at this weekend and who we expect to perform well at Richmond.
Richmond's historically been a really good track, which, funny enough, it's the Toyota Owners 400 is the name of the race. But historically, it's been a Toyota track. I mean, I think you couldn't go wrong realistically with any of the JGR cars, even Gibbs. I know he's been performing better, more consistently better, I should say. I'm really high on him in the power rankings right now, too. I've been really impressed. I think he still shows he's the immature driver in times. Like, won the first stage at Bristol, had a really good car, but when it came down to it, it was the experience, I feel like, that he lacked to save his tires. But regardless, I like any of the JGR cars. I'm not strong, believe it or not, on Reddick this week. I've looked at his numbers. I don't like to be big on stats, but it's really hard to not be in NASCAR because history tends to repeat itself, and it repeats itself often with NASCAR racers. And he's never been good at Richmond, even since he has joined 2311. He's not had the greatest of finishes. He qualifies good, has speed. But I'm also not good on my guy Chase this week either. He's had top – he could – statistically could easily contend for a win, but his performance just hasn't been up to par, I don't feel like, this season.
So NASCAR.com tells us that Kyle Busch is a guy we should consider this week. Finished top 10 in 11 of his last 12 Richmond races, 6 Richmond wins. He's done well at short tracks. But, man, every week you're watching Kyle Busch and you're just going – something's the team. It's not, I don't even think it's Kyle Busch necessarily. It just, the team's just not rolling right now. Are we gonna, do we have to wait until he proves something to us, or can we still put any trust in Kyle Busch?
Yeah, I can agree with you to an extent. I think he was on par for a way better finish last week before he got caught up with Christopher Bell. So I definitely think he's turned something around. But he's not had the great performances, whether it just be pit road penalties or errors, anything. He's not been good, but Richmond is a good place to pick Kyle Busch. Not to mention when me and Caleb were talking about our picks, which I believe Caleb, those dropped today, went with Kyle. Kyle's motivated now. I think his incident with Christopher Busch lit a fire under him a little more. So than anything. So I think you could watch out for Kyle this week. Very much so. I'm actually going to put Kyle in my fantasy lineup for that reason.
The classic chip on the shoulder, extra motivator. Him and Bell, Bell looked somewhat surprised and kind of like pooping his pants kind of to a degree.
Yeah.
When Busch came to him this week, which is interesting to see too. And again, I don't know Christopher Bell. I have not seen a lot of Christopher Bell. He doesn't seem like the kind of guy who's going to try to stir up problems. So for Busch to come at him that way, it just seems a little bit out of character for who he was going after versus anything else.
Right. And I think that that was the reason why he looked so scared too, knowing how Kyle Busch's history has been when he approaches other drivers. He was well aware that Kyle was mad, I think. But that's going to be interesting to watch, especially if Kyle can contend this weekend.
Speed-wise,
because we touched on it, like you said, JGR is hot right now. If you can catch them, then I think that'll be an interesting storyline to keep up with too.
I think when you go into fantasy, you've got your mainstays, like you mentioned already. Toyota guys are good plays this week. Including, I think, the Truex throw. He's had, of course, he's leading the points right now as well. Do you have a dark horse or one or two guys that maybe are not your every week kind of guys that you can put in at any track, but somebody that maybe if you're trying to save some starts on your fantasy NASCAR team that maybe more of a dark horse guy that we can put into the lineup this week?
Yeah, your guy, Josh Berry. I like Josh this week as a pick to kind of just use up a spot to where you could save maybe the bigger team like a Denny Hamlin or something, or put him in your garage for that matter. I like Josh. He had a good showing with the 9 team here, and I think Richmond, again, is going to fit more into his skill set as a driver. He's the short track, at heart kind of guy. That's how he made his mark. Yeah. So I like Josh. I also like if Stuart Haas can have a good weekend, I like Noah Gragson as well. And then Bowman. We touched on that a little earlier. I think this track is a good track for Alex to show out. And if he's going to grab a win, it could be at a track like Richmond or a Martinsville.
Nice. Very nice. All right, Chris, tell everybody. I know you do your power rankings every week. Tell everybody where they can follow you, catch all your content.
Yeah, so I drop my power rankings every Tuesday now. I've kind of got a good rotation with it this far this season. Typically, those drop out the Belly Up Sports main page, and then I post them on my own, which is Everything NASCAR, where my handle is NASCAR for Everyone. I do that, and then I do a piece as well with our other cover guy for the sport, Caleb. We do a picks and odds type article as well. We drop it on Wednesday now, so you can find that on there as well. But yeah, that's basically it. I'd like to talk NASCAR there, and then on my personal pages, we can talk Georgia football, Atlanta football. We can talk a little more of everything there. But if you're looking for the NASCAR stuff, that's where I send people.
And I don't gamble, but I like reading the picks stuff that you and Caleb do. I get a good read out of that. I think good information in there as well. Caleb's a little self-deprecating at times, which is fun as well. But it's good stuff for sure. Well, Chris, I've got to run because I got to get on a baseball show here at 9 o'clock. But I really appreciate you coming on, talking NASCAR with us. We're going to continue to have Chris on throughout the season. Sometimes his work schedule doesn't match up with the show schedule, but we always appreciate you coming on and talking some NASCAR with us.
Yeah, for sure, man. We'll do it again soon, hopefully.
All right. Sounds good. Chris Prince of Belly Up Sports right there with us again today. We want to thank everybody for tuning in tonight. Don't forget to visit righteousfelon.com. Use the code STOVE15 at checkout, and you're going to get 15% off your purchase. You can jump on, by the way, our Fantasy NASCAR. If you go on to NASCAR.com and click on Fantasy Live, you can search our group. It's called the Sports Stove 500. You can jump in there. We just had two new guys join this week. So jump on in. Have fun with us. Compete with us. We sure appreciate that as well. Follow us on social media at Sports Stove on Twitter and Instagram. And hey, if you like baseball, jump over to the Belly Up Sports YouTube page to catch the Belly Up Super Show, Baseball Super Show, something like that. It's on right now. I got to get over there to join the show as well. Thanks for tuning into tonight's edition of the Sports Stove Podcast. Until next time, we'll see you around the Sports Stove.